The Me Too movement is gaining momentum. Allegations of sexual harassment have undone some pretty powerful men in entertainment, in business, but in politics too. There's Al Franken, there's Roy Moore. We should probably mention the President of the United States, who's had some serious accusations leveled at him. And you're starting to hear from women about demeaning or sexually inappropriate behavior in local politics, too. There have been cases in the state houses of Colorado and California. Here in Utah, there hasn't been an expose or a major allegation to make the headlines yet, but people are looking. This is More to Say. I'm Doug Fabrizio. And speaking of looking, KUER's Nicole Nixon has been investigating the sexual dynamics on Utah's Capitol Hill. She's with me here in the studio. Welcome. Hi.
Hi.
So what exactly were you looking for? Like, where did you start on the story?
Anything. We started just kind of asking women who spend a lot of time on Capitol Hill, what have you seen and what have you heard?
It's almost like the piece is like, what's it like to be a woman up in a place where there are a lot of men?
A lot of men. I think the legislature is like 20% female with lawmakers. So we did a lot of off-the-record conversations. The only people, it seems like, that would be willing to talk on the record were lawmakers, women with power.
Yeah.
So we reached out to a few staffers, and they did not want to talk on the record. Even a few lobbyists who are still active on the Hill did not want to talk on the record because they're interacting with a lot of these male lawmakers every day during the legislature.
It's interesting because you'd think that with the Me Too movement and some of these other stories that are out there that some women would feel emboldened to come forward, but I guess they're not there
yet.
Yeah,
and that's what we thought, and that's what we've seen. I think in Colorado there have been five men now, five lawmakers that have had allegations of sexual harassment against them. So we thought, you know, maybe the time's right in Utah. Maybe women are, you know, a little more willing now to talk about some of this stuff. And I was pretty surprised that still there's a reluctance to talk publicly about it.
Any idea why?
A lot of them are still worried about their jobs.
Yeah.
It's still a very male-dominated space.
I have to say, I think in some ways that is what really came forward. That's what came through in the piece, was that while there haven't been any allegations yet of, as you said, physical sexual impropriety, that there's a lot of kind of inherent sexism up there, and it kind of reveals itself in just patronizing, demeaning kind of behavior.
Yeah, and that's what we found. So we actually requested the formal complaints that they've had in the last decade or so. We only got three, and only two of those had any details. But a lot of those details were redacted. These are heavily redacted documents.
Explain this to me, because I want people can't see this, obviously, but we have in front of us these papers, and they are blackened out with the details, the redaction.
Names, offices where these people work, some of the dates, details that could identify them at all. I even called for one of these incidents. I think I was able to figure out that it happened in the Senate. And I called to get a confirmation on that, and they said, we can't tell you. Couldn't even tell me what chamber it happened in.
Let's talk about this particular story in this particular document you have in front of you, because it crosses the line, clearly. It's a pretty creepy story. It doesn't go full on out in terms of, I guess, sexual assault, but it seems pretty serious.
Well,
it's
a power play.
Right.
So this female, I assume she's young from reading this, she is filling in, it sounds like, at the front desk, and her supervisor...
Is this a lawmaker, do we know?
We have no idea.
Okay.
They wouldn't say. So
a man.
A man, higher up, supervisor, calls her things like honey and sweetie a lot, and she's uncomfortable by that. So let me just read this. On another occasion, Blank thought she had cut her hand. She reported that Blank walked around the desk where she was standing and kissed her hand and said, "Now you are all better," and something similar to Blank being a young girl who needs to be taken care of. Blank complained to him about the kiss and his comment. Blank reported that Blank said, I will remember that at your next evaluation.
Blank sounds like a jerk.
A little bit.
But that is the... What else did you find? Let's talk a little bit about what else you found.
We want to go over this this other heavily redacted comment. This is the one that I think happened in the Senate. And I think that it happened the day that the Senate was voting on the resolution recommending that President Trump rescind the Bears Ears National Monument. When they vote on things like that, a lot of the times it's like celebratory. And it sounds like there was one senator who had a friend come for the vote to kind of celebrate that the Senate was going to vote on this. So this, I assume, friend of a senator was on the Senate floor this day. And that's a very formal space. You're supposed to be dressed up if you're on the Senate floor. Someone informed this guy that he wasn't wearing a tie and he needed to have one to be on the Senate floor. So the senator says, I assume the senator says, go to my office. I've got some in there. So the friend goes to the office. He's looking through ties. And somebody asked him what he was doing. Like, what are you doing in this guy's office? And he says, I'm looking for a tie. And it's a woman. He says, can you tie this on me? And she says, no. And he asks her three or four times, tie this tie on me. And she says, I don't know how. I don't even tie a tie on my own husband. And he gets all huffy. He ties it on himself. There's no mirror in the office. That's why he wanted her to tie it on him. And he ties it on and he says, well, at least fix the back of my collar. So she does. And she's a little reluctant to do that. And there's somebody reported, you know, that she made a face while she did it, like exasperated, rolling her eyes. And so she fixed the back of his collar and he says, good girl. And then he walks away. And then later in the day, she reported that he grabbed her roughly by the arm and said, here's your tie back, and kind of shoved it at her.
Talk a little bit about the women who would go on the record. As you say, women
sure.
lawmakers.
Mm-hmm.
Does this kind of a thing happen all the time up there? I mean, what were they saying about the kind of sexual dynamics on the Hill?
So the women that we were able to talk to on the record, we talked to Representative Patrice Arendt, and she actually mentioned a lot of the harassment she's experienced on the Hill in her decades-long career on there. She started
she's
as
a legislative
intern, and she's been an elected representative for quite a long time.
I was a young intern, and I was working in the governor's office, but doing legislative work. So I wasn't with the other interns in the same sense of kind of the camaraderie of all of that. And I had some lobbyists specifically treat me very inappropriately, even a couple of legislators. And I was young and I didn't handle it properly. I didn't tell anybody. I think maybe they would have backed me up and been very supportive, but I didn't. And I just didn't know what would happen with my career. And so I just kept it quiet and then learned to avoid certain people or never be with them alone.
She wouldn't get specific. She just mentioned lots of harassment, lots of demeaning comments. She was pregnant, and she said it was even worse while she was pregnant.
I was an associate general counsel to the legislature. I was the first attorney in that position who had ever become pregnant, let alone during the session. And I'm not talking about somebody comes up and pats your belly and makes some cute little comment. I'm talking about things that were much more serious than that. And again, I never talked to anybody about it. I should have. The culture was very different then. And
the other lawmaker I talked to was Representative Angela Romero. And she said, yeah, I get it all the time. We all get it. But she, again, didn't want to go into specifics, talked about how to change the culture. She runs a lot of these bills to try to mitigate sexual violence. And then we did talk to a lobbyist called Jennifer Daley Provo.
Daily hyphen Provo, Provost.
It's pronounced Provo, but
it is spelled Provost.
Interesting.
Yeah, most people say Provost.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Yep.
Okay, so sexual harassment at the state legislature, is it a problem?
It is a problem, but I certainly don't think that it's unique to the state legislature. I think that it's a problem everywhere, and it's certainly present, and for some people, probably prevalent. at the legislature.
I have to say I was impressed that she would come forward.
Yeah, and, you know, I had mentioned to some people, some women that I was working on this story, and a friend of hers convinced her to call me and go on the record, which I was, it surprised me, and I was really excited to talk to her. So she came in. Again, she wouldn't name specific incidents.
In some cases, you can do things to try to protect yourselves. You know, you don't meet with certain people without somebody else present, and it shouldn't have to be that way, but it just is.
Yeah. Are there certain people, I mean, you said, are there certain people that, you know, you kind of talk to each other about and know to avoid and avoid going into their office alone with them?
There are a handful within the entire community at the Capitol. That said, the vast majority of our legislators and lobbyists, in my experience, have never done anything wrong, are perfectly polite and professional. And so I don't want to create some kind of idea that it's this, you know, that it's this horrible, it's running rampant among everybody who's up there. I would say there are a couple of bad actors, but it is still pervasive.
So we should probably mention that the lobbyist who was so brave to come forward is not going to be a lobbyist for long. At least she's running for office. We should probably point that out.
Yeah, she's running for the House. She's running. Representative Rebecca Chavez-Houck is retiring, and she's endorsed Jen Daly Provo for her seat.
So another one of these women who came forward who is going to be in a position of power, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Did the women you talked to, whether they went on record or not, talk about what the atmosphere of this kind of attitude was like? Was it demoralizing? I mean, what was the atmosphere like in that sense?
Yeah, it's demoralizing. Of course it is. And there's kind of a shock factor when somebody says something like that, when somebody is calling you honey or sweetie and you don't like to be called that. What do I do? What do I say? How do I get him to stop without ruining our professional relationship? And that's something that I heard from Jennifer Daly Provo, too, is that she wants to say something and she feels guilty even for not saying something, but she feels like she can't.
The problem as a female in saying something about it and pushing back against it is that my ability to do my job, to advocate for the people whose needs that I'm fighting for, can be significantly hampered if I don't have access to the lobbyists for some of the other industries, or if I don't have access to a legislator because I've somehow put them on notice and made them defensive. And so I struggle because I feel like not saying anything also implicates me in being part of the problem. And the perverse reality of that is every time I don't say something, it, number one, communicates to the perpetrator that their behavior is okay, and number two, leaves some victim behind me exposed to experiencing that when maybe I could have done something to prevent it. And so there's this perverse guilt that also shouldn't be there.
So is there some kind of awareness, at least, do you think, that to address or prevent sexual harassment, is there a policy in place? Do they have mechanisms in place?
So lawmakers are required to have a discrimination training, a workplace discrimination training, and that includes sexual harassment, I think every year before the session. There was some debate a few months ago about requiring lobbyists to have that. And we have heard that, you know, lobbyists are as much of the problem here as lawmakers.
This was an interesting part of the story, I have to say, this part about who is included in these sexual harassment rules and the reluctance that you had from some male lawmakers in your story to impose these rules on lobbyists, mm-hmm. as if lobbyists were somehow guests.
Lobbyists aren't our employees. They're not. They don't work for us. They're guests. They're people who are coming to the Capitol to do their job. And so what this bill does, and if I understand it right, is it allows us to because we regulate lobbyists, it allows us to put a stronger requirement on them saying, look, you're here as our guests, and if you're going to do things to harass our employees, we're going to invite you to not be here, essentially.
We heard Representative Norm Thurston call them guests and say, I don't think we should be regulating guests at the Capitol. Before somebody pointed out, Representative Patrice Arendt, that they are there to do a job.
And all due respect to the comments made earlier, I think that the annual training is necessary.
They may not have offices in the Capitol, but they're there to work, and they should be respectful of other employees.
We already regulate lobbyists. We tell them they have to file reports. We tell them they have to wear a name tag so that we know who they are and that they're a lobbyist. So it's not like they're your typical person who's just come up from your constituent to visit with you. They're here in a paid position, or at least in almost a full-time or even a part-time position. But if they're a lobbyist, they're in a different category. Another comment came from another legislator saying that adults, when they get to the stage, should have enough common sense that they don't need this sort of education. But that doesn't make sense to me either, because we have a problem. We know we have to educate our staff. We know we have to educate our legislators. Certainly we should be educating lobbyists, and there should be consequences if they aren't willing to be educated or if they break the rules.
You still have asks out there. You're still looking for stories. You're hoping people come forward, not to create something out of nothing, but do you think the story that you did and the people that you talked to may help other people come forward?
Yeah, I hope so. And the legislature started this week. Again, that's something we'll be looking for and watching. I think, at least I hope, that the last few months, the conversation that the country's been having has some men, you know, thinking about it a little more. It's a little more front in their mind. But again, Jennifer Daly Provo said in my interview with her, she was worried that this would have a backlash effect. And this is something we heard from a couple other women off the record, that, I don't know, because it's so front, it's in the headlines every day. Some men are afraid to meet with women now alone, and that could exclude them from opportunities. I've even heard women say things like, when they're in a packed room and a guy is trying to squeeze past them, they go, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm not sexually assaulting you, don't mind me. Kind of joking about it like that.
KUER's Nicole Nixon, thank you.
Thanks.
More to Say is a production of KUER News. You'll find Nicole's original report in our show notes at KUER.org. Doug Fabrizio is our host, and you can hear more of his interviews by subscribing to Radio West. More to Say is produced by Tim Slover and edited by Lee Hale.